Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 142, recorded on November 9th, 2011. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me, as usual, is Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how's it going?
Hey, good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Powering through some unfortunate situations. Jeff Gamet's also here from the Mac Observer. How's it going, Jeff?
I am doing good, and apparently, I'm not having to power through weird situations. So
yeah, I'm the only one really powering through. So,
aren't you computer and iPadless in Illinois? Is that a film title or something like that?
It is. It's actually true. Yeah, my computer and my iPad are both in Wisconsin, locked in a very secure and unfortunate place.
which shows you just how good of an audio editor Michael is, because Adam and I have just been talking, and Michael later on had to go back and figure out what to say to sound as if he was with us.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's pretty labor intensive, but I do it for the kids and the fans. The kids and the fans.
Yeah, hopefully you used that secure empty trash after the feds confiscated those, or before, I guess.
No, I don't do that. No encryption for me. I'm all out in the open. And going to jail soon. So, let's talk about the iPhone. iOS 5.
Let's do that.
Battery life issues. As we talked about on the last episode, there have been some battery issues with not only the iPhone 4S, but iOS 5 in general. There have been a lot of suggestions coming in from our listeners. If I had my actual show notes in front of me, I wrote down who it was that actually emailed, but thanks to you, and you know who you are, for sending in the tip on turning off raise to speak on the iOS on iPhone 4S. You know that feature where you can just put it up to your head and Siri will turn on. Have you guys tried that feature?
Wait, does that work? No, I don't think I've tried that. Do you have to activate Siri first, though?
Siri has to be on, yeah.
Okay.
No. You mean by activate, you mean press and hold the home button.
Yeah.
No. So I believe, and I've only played with it in the Apple Store, but I believe you need to have the phone at least on.
Oh, yeah,
so
that worked.
It can't be... can you have it at the lock screen but not unlock it?
Let me see. Hold on. Oh, I'm testing it now. I didn't realize that. Stupid me, I thought it had to be like Siri activated, and then from that point forward, it worked like that. And I had used it like that a couple times. I never thought of just like sticking the phone to my ear for a couple seconds and seeing what happened.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not surprised. I mean, it's not like anyone ever uses these things as phones. Oh, wait.
I mean, I don't use it as a phone.
It apparently does have to be awake. But not, it can be on the lock screen, but you do have to wake it up first.
Cool. Well, that's a nice tip. But
so
battery
I'm turning
life,
that off right now. I mean,
that's one suggestion, and it'd be interesting to see are you having battery life issues?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Because the battery life issues aren't just on the iPhone 4S, right? They extend to a lot of different iOS 5 devices, correct?
Yeah, but I mean, if that thing is like constantly scanning or pulling or something like that, then...
Well, it's got to know. I wonder if there's a little bit of accelerometer sensing involved in actually detecting whether or not it goes up to your face. Because when that happens, when it's actually trying to see if it's up to your face or not, the infrared light is on. There's a little infrared proximity sensor there, and you can tell. I don't know if you've ever used your phone like on a call in very near total darkness, but you can actually see that little infrared on when you're on that call. So at the very least, it uses that. So maybe turning that off helps. That's one suggestion from a listener.
Michael, are you saying you can actually see in infrared?
Yeah. Does that mean I'm highly evolved?
Yes, we'll call it highly evolved.
Weird.
I've seen that on, you know, the IR sensors on remotes. There's a certain kind that does give off a
very faint glow. Red light. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's,
I don't think it's actually infrared being emitted from the sensor itself.
That'd be cool if I could see infrared.
Yeah.
Another suggestion, although it seems like it's not helping, is turning off time zone sensing, which I didn't realize was in there until I went to Washington, D.C. a couple weekends ago and my iPad knew what time it was when I changed my time zone. So that was pretty cool. Although it doesn't work all the time. When I got back, it didn't change itself. A lot of people were saying that didn't work. However, Apple has confirmed that it is recognizing the fact that there are battery issues. Mm-hmm. And they're working on a fix. They've actually issued two betas already. So iOS 5.01 and 5.01 beta 2, not only to developers, but also to some people who have come into the Genius Bar or called Apple and complained. Apple's actually been bringing those customers in on the beta testing process, which I think is a new thing for Apple.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I like it.
I'll say this. I am in the developer program. I cannot confirm or deny whether I've installed the beta updates.
But if you could, they're not helping.
But I'm still having battery issues on my iPhone 4S, which is odd.
I'm sure they're still working on it. I hope they're still working on it. So in addition to battery life bug fixes, the update also adds multitasking gestures for the original iPad, which I didn't realize didn't have them. So that's cool. Resolves bugs with documents in the cloud, improves voice recognition for Australian users. That's nice. And security improvements. And I'm sure a multitude of other bug fixes that are too minor to mention there.
Can I say an interesting story about this whole battery issue thing, though?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
kind
please.
Of, kind of funny. So I was talking to somebody who was an Android user. They were actually at my user group meeting. So I was presenting Siri at the user group meeting. We were talking about the iPhone 4S and some of the new improvements and stuff like that. And I mentioned the battery life issue. I said, yeah, but you know, the iPhone 4S has been having these battery issues. And the Android guy raises his hand and goes, well, you know, how much battery life do you get? And I went, well, you know, like 8 to 12 hours. And he about fell out of his chair because he's like, I'm lucky if I get 6.
Wow.
Probably more like 4. He's like, if I can get half a day, I'm happy. So I'm like, and I'm complaining because I'm getting 12 hours and that sucks.
Yeah, I know Android users that have 2 batteries. And with 2 batteries, they're lucky to get through half a day.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Gives you a little perspective.
Yeah. Makes you happy to be an iPhone owner.
So the Android people are like looking at us, go, what are you whining about?
You entitled little bitches. Yeah.
But I mean, and when I say 12 hours, that's when I'm hardly using it. You know, that's very, very light usage. Whereas with my old phone, I could go a day and a half, 2 days probably, if I was using it that lightly. So my battery life has been about halved from what I used to have, which, I mean, that's significant when you're used to having a certain amount of battery life.
Yeah.
So, but it was funny. It just gave me this funny perspective. I think he was going to run out and buy an iPhone right at that moment. He was like ready to trade in just on battery
just
alone.
Just battery life. Yeah.
I'll take that sucky battery life.
Right. No wonder you can't replace the battery. It's not necessary. Jeff, you're on iOS 5?
I am.
Okay. I have not been on iOS 5 because you can't jailbreak without being tethered.
Because you can't jailbreak without being tethered.
I know. How's your battery life?
It's not as good as it was under iOS 4, but I think it's better than what Adam is getting.
Yeah.
Okay. So there are other issues, but now... A lot of people have also been saying that location-based reminders, and that actually makes a lot of sense, and I think we talked about that last time.
I stopped playing with location-based reminders because that turned my battery into an Android battery.
Okay. So now, so you've turned that off, but your battery life is still not as good.
But it's substantially better than with location reminders on.
Yeah. I bet that's something they are working on. That's probably one of the primary things they're working on, because you shouldn't have that significant of a battery suck.
Something that I think helped me, and this is just a theory, but it seemed to improve a little bit, was I went through, after upgrading, I was like getting a ton of notifications on the lock screen. Like all my notifications were on and pushing stuff to my lock screen. I turned off the ones that I didn't really care about being in the lock screen, not notification center, but just, you know, the lock screen.
Right.
And I think that helped because, you know, every time one would come in, the screen turns on and it was just, there was a lot of stuff going there. So I think that helped to a certain degree as well.
Mm-hmm.
In my case, and just the theory being that it would push stuff, because now I notice when they're not coming up on the lock screen when I unlock the phone, then they all start streaming in on the notification center, kind of all in one big, you know, block.
Yeah.
So I think there was some polling going on in the background, or at least pushing to the phone of notifications when you have stuff turned on the lock screen, and that probably drains the battery as well.
Maybe. Well, certainly the part where it turns on the screen.
Exactly. Yeah. I didn't need to know about every Facebook, you know, thing that came in to my phone, like, immediately.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that notification center when I can upgrade. I'm enjoying it on my iPad, but...
Yeah, I'm really enjoying notification center. But, Adam, you're right. If you just leave it set to default... You get so many notifications about stuff that you probably don't care about.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's turning on the sound. If you're playing a sound, it's turning on the screen to show you the notification when it comes in, you know, and I think that, and then plus I think it's also, you know, pushing to the phone when it's locked. Whereas it seems like the other notifications, when that's not set, come in after I turn the phone on. So I don't know if it dials home. And just to check what the notifications are. I'm not entirely certain how notifications, you know, work. I thought they were supposed to be pushed, but it doesn't seem like if they're just coming into Notification Center and they're not displaying on the lock screen that they're necessarily, quote-unquote, pushed.
I think either way they're coming to your phone and it only shows up when you unlock it.
You think they're just being kind of batched in the background somewhere?
Yeah, that's what it kind of seems like on my iPad as well, because, and we can test this theory with like airplane mode and stuff, but it seems like that's probably what's going on. Now, can you change the alert tones for applications? You can't, can you, in iOS 5?
Ooh,
because
that's a good question.
That would be great. Because there are a couple applications that just have really dumb tones, like it's just a little blip as if you're supposed to hear that.
You can change for some of the built-in ones. I don't think you can go app by app.
Okay.
But you can change like new email versus a tweet versus a calendar alert versus a reminder alert, that sort of thing.
Yeah, so built-in apps, that makes sense.
Right.
Yeah, it'd be great if Apple
added that. I don't know
if
you can go in app by app.
I bet on an app by app basis developers have to build that in.
It would be it'd be really easy if we're talking about from a UI standpoint. In the notification center, you just have sounds and it says default, and you tap it and it lets you preview the
default. Well, you already have that. I mean, you go into notifications and you have your full list of apps, and you can go into the app screen and then you can control the same way you would control the alert style, whether you get a banner or an alert or a badge. You would just have one
unique,
other thing.
Right, that's
unique
what I'm saying.
Alert tones. I'm betting that Apple restricts the built-in tones. And
no, I'm saying allow. So the default is whatever the developer picks,
right?
And then the other options are whatever the tones are available for text and all that.
Yeah, but I'm betting Apple restricts access to that. So
I'm saying it'd be good if Apple could do that.
They have to build it in.
Yeah, I'm saying Apple should do that.
Oh.
This is wishful thinking. I'm sorry.
I get it now. I'm slow.
It's okay. So, Siri has been hacked to run on an iPod Touch and the iPhone 4.
And a 3GS.
Ooh. How is it on the 3GS?
Perfectly fine.
Not slow?
Didn't seem in the video that I saw.
Cool.
But it had limited functionality, didn't it? I'm trying to remember.
I think with the iPod...
They only did like one command in the little video I saw, so I don't know how robust it is, but it seemed to function fine.
What I've heard is that the only issue you run into is an audio fidelity to Siri. So with the iPod, for example, the microphone is not as good as on a phone, so that hinders it. And I'm also guessing that because you don't have the little noise reduction microphone like you do on the 4 and the 4S, that might also hinder that. But it's cool. I'm ready to... I don't know how long it'll be after I'm able to jailbreak my iPhone 4 on iOS 5 before I will actually get an iPhone 4S, but it's nice for people who don't want to upgrade and who are willing to jailbreak. So it's definitely a jailbreak thing, although I don't think it's even available at this point. And there's been... It kind of implied in the story that it requires not just some kind of tweak in the system, but maybe requires you to actually have some components that aren't usually included. Now, with my experience with iOS, the bundle is kind of the same no matter what phone you're on. No matter what either phone or iPod you're on, it generally contains the same stuff. It's just a matter of, okay, this is a phone, it only does this. This is an iPod, it only does this. So you might have the camera app on an older iPod, but it doesn't have a camera. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
okay, so back to the licensing then. Maybe it's a thing where if you go in and look deep into the developer licensing, it says you can't access code like that on unsupported devices.
Well, I mean, we're not talking about people who are developers playing by the rules. We're talking about jailbreakers.
Right, but the guy that sorted it all out.
Sure.
He seemed concerned about licensing.
Well, again, that would be even in the jailbreak community. If you're sending out code, if you need Siri.app in order to make this work, jailbreakers can't distribute that, and they don't do that. If we're talking about official dev team guys, they don't advocate that because it is illegal to do that. But if we're talking about
the nuance licensing too.
Well, again, I mean, if it's already on the phone, then just simply saying, "Here's a program that changes a P list to enable it," then that's fine because it's already there.
I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, but I'm thinking if I'm Nuance and I have a licensing deal with Apple and Apple says it's only on these devices, and then some third party comes along and enables that to get triggered on additional devices that weren't part of the original agreement between Nuance and Apple.
Right.
There's probably some licensing issues there, and you probably could go after the guy that enabled it to be working on devices that weren't licensed.
And I'm betting you're right.
It's possible. I don't think people
seems
are that
like
worried
to
about
me.
It. The other thing is I haven't seen any other talk about it from... So once this came out, you know that a lot of people went, okay, so it seems like it's something that can be done, and they went digging and probably either didn't find the... If it was just a P list, if it was just a property list that they had to edit, and they looked around, they didn't find it, and they realized, oh, this is an actual app that you need to get,
then I think they, there was then they more to it just, than that.
I think there's probably
I think the hack
more
was
to
pretty
it.
Involved because it wasn't it.
It sounded it like it.
9to5 who was in contact with the developer that was kind of working on this, and that's where I saw a lot of the. It was either 9to5 or ours, not Ars Technica. One, I forget which website that I was kind of following this on, but they were putting out videos, and I think they had noted in there that they had to actually copy the files over from an iPhone 4S onto a 4 and. That yeah. There was some pretty heavy hacking that went on.
I mean, and if that's the case, then it would not be out there right now. So, which makes sense.
Yeah. And I think they even noted in there that it was definitely not for the faint of heart.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So iTunes Match. It was supposed to be out at the end of October.
iTunes don't match. It don't match.
No match.
Well, it might match. We just don't know because it's not there.
Yeah, it might match later. So on the 1st, no iTunes match. And also the iTunes, the beta versions of iTunes that developers were using to help test iTunes match, that expired. So there was a day, I think there was a period of 2 days where developers could not open iTunes if they had that version of iTunes. So not only can you not open that version of iTunes, but you can't open your iTunes library with an older version of iTunes because because it restricts you to that one version. And anytime you upgrade iTunes, and anybody who has fiddled around with it knows, you can't roll back to an earlier version of iTunes just because they're always changing stuff in the database and it just isn't compatible.
They're just developers. Don't worry about them.
You know, this is a really good example of why, if you're not a developer and you're getting a hold of beta stuff, you probably don't want to.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
There are a lot of people out there that get a hold of betas of iOS 5 and iTunes and all that stuff, thinking, oh, I get to play with it early. Then they get pissed off when something breaks because it's beta.
Yeah, it's beta for a reason. But they do say, and it also goes to show that you should heed Apple's warnings. In this case, the warning that you should not use this copy of iTunes with a library of music that you don't maybe want to have ruined.
Yeah.
So not on a production version of iTunes. Thankfully, there is a new version. What is it? 10.5.2 or something like that. Maybe 10.5.1. Yeah, 10.5.1 or
10.5.1 beta 2.
Yeah. So now it's available again for developers. I'm going to say, so I've been using iTunes Match. The previous version, the one that expired, it was a total suck. It the progress, so what it does is it kind of does a genius. So if you've ever turned on genius and waited for it to scan through your entire library, it does that kind of process where it looks at all your music and then it submits it to Apple and waits for a response and then it loads that in. So that's the first part of the match. Then it on the iTunes server side, it takes that information, whatever data it assembled, and decides what songs you have. So then you're just sitting there waiting for iTunes to return that result. And then after that, they update or upload the songs that iTunes does not have available, which makes sense and is probably what everyone would expect, except that with the previous version, it really didn't give you any indication of what was going on. For me, anyway, it said like 8,000 songs matched of zero or something like that, and it just didn't move, and I ended up leaving it on for a couple days, and it did actually finish,
but it gave me
no indication of progress. Now with this version, it's much closer, and a lot of you may have noticed in the iTunes store you see now a coming soon on in the store for iTunes Match. So that indicates that it's getting closer, and it certainly has gotten closer. So there is progress now when you do iTunes Match, and it lets you know what's going on with that. And it worked much better. I feel like the streaming is a lot quicker, a lot more responsive. So they're definitely getting closer. And in addition to that, they've also turned on iTunes Match on the Apple TV too. So if you have an Apple TV too, you now have a music section, which if you don't have iTunes Match is totally useless for you right now because you can't sign up for it. But if you're a developer, you can sign in and you get cloud access to all of your music, which is very cool.
The all or nothing nature of the thing to me makes it lame.
How so? Because you'd like to listen to your purchased music?
No. I have a set of music. I've been doing this on my my iPhone because I have limited storage. You know, I've always had kind of a subset of my music that I like to sync to my phone. I have two smart playlists. You know, one is like a random 150 songs that gets generated every time and just syncs to the phone. And then I think another 150 of my most recently purchased songs. So I have those two, and so I have 300 songs that are like my bass songs that I always let sync to my device. And then I add additional playlists or albums, you know, as I see fit or as I want to. With iTunes Match, it's my understanding that once it's on, the only way you get music onto your device is you have to download it from the cloud, basically, or stream it, quote unquote, stream it.
Yeah. So when you're,
here's my thing is, you know, I'm getting ready to go on an airplane. If I haven't downloaded or synced any music to my phone, now I'm on the plane. I want to listen to something. Guess what? Nothing.
Yeah.
I got zero music. No way to connect, no way to download it, no way to get it. So you have to do it while you're in the airport before you get on the plane. Why can't there be like a base set of like, okay, I want these playlists always on my device.
Right.
And then pull down other stuff from the cloud. I don't get why it's an all or nothing, I guess is my thing.
Okay, Adam, I got a question for you.
Yeah, I agree. It should be more than all or nothing. And I totally just interrupted you. Sorry.
Yeah, it's cool. So I haven't played with it in a while on my computer anyway. So have you recently tried syncing? So basically what you're describing is when you plug in a device that has iTunes Match on, mm-hmm. the music tab in iTunes is useless. It says mm-hmm. you have iTunes Match on. Go mess with iTunes Match.
That's my understanding. You said you have it, right?
I do, but I have it on my iPad, but I haven't plugged in and tried syncing music manually. And of course my iPad is in Wisconsin, so otherwise I would try it.
That's my understanding. So I'm just saying,
I know
that's
it was,
way it is.
It was
I don't think that's the right approach.
I agree. And it was that way at some point, at least early on. So I don't know if it's that way right now. Is there any way for you to verify that, Adam? Verify or not verify or unverify?
I cannot confirm or deny.
Okay. All right, that's unfortunate.
I might be able to.
You might be able to not...
Confirm or deny.
Right, okay, cool. Yeah, let us know.
I will not confirm.
Okay.
Or...
Whatever. Something.
My head hurts.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, so yeah, that is totally sucky. And even though you could go, it does sync playlists, and you could go up to the playlist and say download all, that's still just totally dumb. It doesn't make any sense at all because, again, like you said, you want to hop on a plane, you want to have this music that you definitely know you have, and for me, when I get my iTunes Match on, I want to have the iPhone playlist that I right now sync to my phone, but I also want to have the option to listen to other stuff that I on a whim want to listen to. So hopefully Apple will get that sorted. And if not, when it comes out, people will get upset. And it seems like Apple's been following the trend of actually listening to us. So
So if I had iTunes Match and I was looking at iTunes at the music tab.
Mm-hmm. Hypothetically.
Right now, yeah. I think it would be probably just saying that iTunes Match is on.
And you can't do anything else.
And it would not be able to do anything else.
Okay, yeah. Interesting. Yeah, hypothetically.
Hypothetically.
Yeah, okay.
That's what it would look like.
Okay, yeah. All right, well, we'll see what happens when it's released. So it is on Apple TV 2s. That's fun. I don't think you can download it. It's just all streaming, but that's nice. Native Gmail client. A native Gmail app for iOS was released. It had been rumored to be on its way, and it was released.
I had that app for a long time before they released it, though.
What are you talking about?
It was called Mail.app.
Oh, yeah.
No, see,
okay, now, see, I downloaded
the
actual...
It works really good.
It does. It works great. I downloaded the Google version.
Yeah.
And... I think the process of me going, oh, there it is, downloading it, launching it, trying it out, and deleting it was less than 10 minutes.
Do you still have it on your computer?
Oh, God, no.
I want you to send it to me. See if you can dig it up.
Oh, actually, yes. I do have the file.
Okay, yeah. I want you to send that to me later because I want to try
it. It's crap. It's absolute crap.
I bet you think it's crap, and I bet I'll love it.
How does it compare to the web app?
the web app is, well, it's basically the web app,
but with push notifications.
In a native app shell.
Sounds great to me. I want that.
But not as good as the web app.
Not as, okay, well, just send it to me. What's wrong with it? Is it, are you saying that there's a web view embedded into it, and so it still has, like, maybe
that's basically what it is.
Bad performance, you're saying? So it's not as smooth as a native application would be?
Well, performance-wise, okay, trying it on an iPad 2, you'd have to really munch up the code to make it have bad performance.
Well, the way you would do that is you just say, here's a web view, load this page that is the web app.
That's basically what it feels like.
Okay.
Although, if you're using the web app, I think you'll like the interface better than you do in the native app.
Okay. Well, I feel like you guys are biased toward the mail app.
I was actually really excited to try it out.
Okay.
I was very disappointed.
Well, what's wrong with the mail app? Mail app's totally cool. I just don't do email that way. I do it the Gmail way. I use labels and archiving and yada yada.
How many email accounts do you manage through Gmail?
Quite a few.
Well, then you're not going to like this app.
Okay. Well, I mean, why you can't do multiple? You can't do multiple accounts.
Stuff like that, though.
It's not smart when it comes to dealing with multiple accounts.
How is it not smart?
I gave up trying to make it work. How's that sound?
Okay.
Yeah. On the label thing, Michael, I'll give you that. I mean, labels are basically folders, right? In IMAP, it's Google's creative way of tweaking IMAP folders. And about my only complaint with mail.app or the built-in mail application on Mac OS X with respect to that is, you really can't have multiple labels, quote unquote labels, assigned, because once you move it to one folder, i.e. labeling it in Google's terminology, then it's kind of locked into that, because the mail client on the Mac only obviously supports putting an email in one folder. You can't have the same email.
It wouldn't make sense to do that. Yeah.
As far as I know. Yeah. So that's where it breaks down. But, you know, beyond that, mail.app works just fine for me managing my Google.
Certainly. And don't get me wrong, I don't use the Gmail web app. I'm not insane.
Okay, that's lucky.
Yeah, I still use mail.app, but if all I'm saying is if I could use a native Gmail app that allows me to archive and label like it does on my computer, then I would like that. But
do you use Mailplane on your on your desktop?
Yes. Oh my goodness, yes. I love Mailplane.
But isn't that just the web app in an app shell, basically?
Yep, and there are several reasons why that's great. One, you can drag attachments right to the window. You just drop it on there, and there you go. There's the attachment. Another is, if you're clicking on any mail to links, it opens that instead of opening mail or going, you know, dir.
Oh, I hate it when applications go dir.
Yeah, I don't want that to happen. And there, I guess there are a couple other reasons, but I can't. Quick account switching.
Yeah, let me put us back on track. So why was the Gmail app pulled?
There's an issue with push notifications, I guess, and that was on the 2nd of November, and right now, what are we talking? The 9th? Still hasn't been.
Yeah, there was also a problem with I think it was a code error when you would launch the app. I took a screenshot.
Did it say beta? Was it called beta?
it should have. Because I remember as soon as I launched it for the first time, I thought, really, this is what you're going to give me?
Mm, yeah. Well.
Oh, yeah. So you launch it, and what you get looks, it's basically just the Gmail login page, web page, in the app with a notification error on top of it that says no valid app-environment entitlement string found for application.
Is that what you took that? Good.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm looking at the screenshot right now.
Adam, does that make any sense to you, an app stash? Are you familiar with the concept of an app stash? Because I don't know what that is.
Well,
is
app stash that like an environment.
App with a mustache on it?
That's my guess.
Okay. Yeah. That makes
it would be
cool.
Useful.
It's a hipster. It's a hipster app with a mustache.
Of course it is. It's Gmail. That is the hipster app. So maybe maybe what you need is a beard trimmer.
Yeah, that's what I need.
Okay.
No, that's what Google needs. So yeah, so this first screen that you saw when you would launch the app, it didn't instill a sense of confidence in me.
Yeah.
Because it was clear I was looking at a web page, and then with a an application coding error sitting on top of it.
Man, that's unfortunate. I mean, it took them so many years to release.
To put a wrapper on a web page?
Well, I guess we'll get back to this when they have a. When they re-release this, and then maybe we'll have.
Great. So we'll talk about this in 2013.
I think not enough people give credit to web apps, and they probably should have not bothered. They probably should have just done a web app, a proper web app that you could save to the phone and will allow you to do offline email.
But you can't do push notifications.
That would have been totally fine.
You can't do push notifications with a web app. And my biggest complaint about web apps is the performance. You can't, if we're talking about table views and you're scrolling through a bunch of stuff, the performance in scrolling and responsiveness and on like checkboxes and other buttons and that stuff.
Problem. That's not a. I don't think that's a.
No, every single web application I've ever used is not as responsive as a native application. And I know I'm talking about fractions of seconds here, but I'm crazy like that.
But whose responsibility is that?
I think it's Apple's. I think it's a WebKit thing, and I think it's just not. It's obviously. I mean, the code being executed is not compiled. It's.
But there's so many native apps that are doing exactly this Google thing, and I'm seeing more and more of it.
And I hate it. I hate all of it.
Native app wrapper around a thing. And I mean, that's what Adobe's doing too with all their Air apps, right? They have that Air compile a Flash Air thing into a native app. Well, that's bogus.
Yeah, I agree.
Do it right or don't do it at all.
Yeah, get it together.
Or do a web app. I'm perfectly fine. If people want to do a web app, do a web app, but okay, don't do some hybrid. Funky thing.
Don't pretend that it's a real application.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Next on the list here, a hidden panorama mode has been found in iOS 5. So Apple's been working on doing panos in the camera app, clearly, because this one does seem like it is. It's exactly just enable a setting in one of the property lists. It's enable Firebreak. To yes in com.apple.mobile slideshow.plist.
Now, I have a confusion over this. Well, not really a confusion. So it's my understanding you can enable this by editing the plist from, say, your iOS backup file and then restoring that backup file back onto the device.
Can you do that?
Yeah. All of the hacks that I've seen say that you can just do that. So you can use an app like...
So you don't have to jailbreak is what you're saying.
You do not have to jailbreak to enable this.
Nice.
But there an asterisk there?
You have to go in and hack your local backup file. So you can't use iCloud backup. You have to do the regular backup, then extract into that file using, some tool.
Well, you have to know what... So every single one of those files, though, it's named... it's a unique... random string of characters. It's not going to be called com.apple.mobile slideshow.plist. It's going to be called something.
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is. So they must have changed the way they
backup. iOS files directory. I've already looked at it.
Oh, so they must have changed the way they do backups. Are you talking?
Well,
do you have to extract
iPhone
it?
Backup extractor.
Oh no, okay, never mind.
The iOS
no.
files list, and then you can go in there and edit that.
But
then you have to get it back on, packaged back up, and then get it back into the phone.
How do you package it up? Because I don't think that iPhone backup extractor doesn't do that as far as I know.
Right. There's other tools that'll let you go into the backup. One of them's referenced in the 9to5 article. One of the articles has the app that you can use. And I didn't want to use it because I'm not familiar with the developer. So I don't mess with that stuff. But there apparently is a app that you can
tweak those...
That will let you edit that plist file. Yes.
How to enable then, blah, blah, blah without jailbreaking on the iPhone blog.
Mm-hmm. That's actually really cool. I mean, the fact that there's an app out there that will let you do it.
But okay. here's where my question
I'm on
is.
I'm going
to throw it out to the community because a couple of the reports said that you could edit the plist if you had Xcode, but I don't think that is possible. I think that's false reporting, unless there's some trick that I don't know about.
I don't think so. iBackupBot.
Yes, that was it. iBackupBot.
Okay, we'll put a link to the 9to5 story.
So I'd love to know somebody who's actually tried this. You know, I'm assuming it worked because a bunch of people are reporting that it does work. If you jailbreak, it's even easier because there's a Cydia app that you can just run
right.
that will turn it on.
Now, what I saw is that it sucks.
Performance-wise?
No, in terms of like actually looking good.
No. That I don't know about. Apparently, using it is relatively straightforward and simple. You just kind of supposedly, you know, you go into it enables a button in options called panorama. So you, once it's turned on, you go into options, you know, same place where you'd turn on the grid and HDR, I think. And then there's a big button that says panorama. You tap that and it kind of gives you a little window. And then you scan left to right. And then when it gets to the stitch points, it'll automatically snap a picture. And then
it automatically does it.
Yeah. So you hold your phone out and you kind of pan.
And then it keeps snapping pictures and stitches them.
At the right points.
That's
and then,
neat.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so I'm looking, and that does sound like the way that Apple would want to do it.
I'm saying the stitching part maybe isn't
just
all
not
that great.
That great. Yeah, so I'm looking at, on the 9to5 story, they have an example, and you can see the spots. They're not lined up well enough. And I looked through quite a few other photos from guys on MacRumors forums with either really, really badly stitched together stuff or very blurry photos.
They didn't have time to quite finish it up.
Makes sense why they haven't released it. Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of cool that it would be built in, but the reality is there's a lot of great Pano apps for the iPhone already that are
But it's
free.
Nice that they're working on it. It's cool that they're adding that kind of stuff. But then again, developers of those applications I'm sure are upset now.
Well, because I think they're going to do
they're going to do something
Apple always
better.
Leaves room for improvement. I mean, Apple does HDR, but it's not the best HDR app out there. I mean, if that's what you're into, using the built-in one is great, but I mean, if that's what you're into, the built-in one is not going to be enough for you. That's what I was trying to say.
Right. Yeah. If you're looking for convenience, what Apple gives you is great. If you want more, go to the
App
Store.
Yeah. It meets the bare minimum. So the Apple always seems to leave a lot of room for, you know, developers to add on more advanced features with a lot of these technologies. So I think it's for that person who's like, oh, I have my iPhone with me. That's a beautiful sunset. I want a pano of that, but it's not for the person who's like taking panos all the time.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Consumer Reports. Last year, they were upset with the iPhone 4's antenna reception, the death grip issue. did they say they don't recommend it?
They did not recommend it.
They did
until
not.
Apple released the bumper, and then they said, okay, with the bumper, we can recommend it.
But not alone. So they still didn't really recommend the iPhone 4. They recommended the iPhone 4
bumper.
With a bumper. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, however, as you know, the iPhone 4S has the dual antennas. And
dualies, as we call them.
Yeah. So their Consumer Reports is satisfied with it. Apple's newest smartphone performed very well in our tests, and while it closely resembles the iPhone 4 in appearance, it does not suffer the reception problem we found in its predecessor in special tests in our labs. In special reception tests, the iPhone 4S that duplicated those we did on the iPhone 4, a newer phone did not display the same reception flaw, which involves a loss of signal when you touch a spot on the phone's lower left side when you are in an area with weak signal.
You know, and I know people don't like harping on that or that story keep, you know, continuing
That's
to
important.
Repop up, and there's a lot of debate about it. But I'll just tell you this. I had an iPhone 4, and I'm in a weak signal area, and every once in a while I'd be talking on the phone and I'd drop a call, and sure enough, I'd look at where my hand was.
And yep.
It's exact. And it was a very rare instance. I don't want to give the impression that it was like a huge issue, but it did come up from time to time. You know, every once in a while I'd drop a call and it was directly related to me holding the phone in that area. Mm-hmm. Just saying.
Yeah. It doesn't like to be touched there.
No, but, you know, it's important in a relationship to know where the boundaries are.
Have a safe word.
That's have a safe word.
The iPhone safe word is call failed.
Yeah. Okay. So speaking of failed, one other thing about that Consumer Reports thing on the iPhone 4S, even though they're saying, hey, Apple fixed all the antenna issues, it's great, it's an awesome phone, they're still telling people, buy Android phones instead.
Yeah. Why is that?
Well, the reasoning is because you have bigger screens on Android phones.
Which I think is... you know, I was having this conversation over dinner at Blogworld with somebody who was a BlackBerry guy and recently switched to one of the new Verizon phones. And he had his phone out there, and I think it was the 4.5-inch screen. I can't remember, but I remember thinking it was really huge. And they're already moving to, 4.7 and 4.9 even fairly soon?
That's too big for a mobile phone.
I think so. I mean, I think at some point it's not fitting comfortably in my pocket. I mean, I put my phone in my front pocket, and it's just about the right size. If it was any bigger, I think it'd feel really awkward.
I don't want to feel like I'm holding a Kindle to my face or an iPad to my face when I'm making calls. And I don't want to feel like I'm obligated when I pull a phone out of my pocket and it's that big to have to go, Bobo, answer phone.
Okay, now, I will point out, because there's Android people screaming right now, that I think the 4.7-inch is the same physical dimensions as the current 4.5s, because they have reduced the bezel. Like, they've crammed a bigger screen into the same area on a lot of these phones.
Okay, but, well, that's cool that they could do that.
Yeah, but the 4.5 is still, I mean, I've gone in and I've kind of held them up side by side, and it's coarsey. It feels bulky. Even if it's not bulky, I mean, they're slim, thin phones and they're light, but it's just,
well, you
know.
Have to.
For me personally, it's too big.
Of course, we're used to our iPhones.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. You know, I have that size, you're right, that size device, maybe I'd feel different about it.
I don't know how I feel about Consumer Reports. And if what you're saying, Jeff, is true, that they're recommending the Android phones with bigger screens over the iPhone simply based on the fact that they have a bigger screen.
That's not
a good recommendation.
Okay, so
that's not a good criterion to on which to base your recommendation. I think it's up to the person. Certainly, there are people
tiny buttons.
Yeah, people listening to us right now. There are people with Android phones, I'm sure, who
and if you love your Android phone, that's great.
Yeah,
if you use the tool that's correct for you.
Yeah, if you want a bigger screen, that's cool, but. Personally, I think that the iPhone is right around the limit. Maybe a little slightly bigger, maybe, but it's real close to where it should be.
Yeah, I think somewhere between 3.5 and 4-inch is probably good.
Yeah.
I would encourage anybody to just, you know, put the devices side by side and just compare. I mean, everybody's going to have to make their own choice, but really, if it's not pocketable at a certain point, to me, it's not a phone. It's a tablet. It's some other thing.
Yeah, that and the fact that there are so many other good reasons to get an iPhone over an Android phone.
There's a lot of good reasons to get an Android phone, too.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're in that camp and you want the openness and you want all the stuff that brings, that's great, too. And there's great hardware out there. I think that's the great thing, is there's lots of great hardware out on both sides. But, you know, for all the reasons we talk about all the time on this show, that's why I'm an iPhone owner. I think it's the right size for me and it's the right feature set. I don't need all that extra garbage and the stuff that goes along with that. I mean, by the same token, it's why I'm not necessarily a Windows user.
Yeah.
Or a Linux user. I mean, it's even becoming more and more that kind of thing. I mean, if you want to just trick out your phone and you don't want to have to deal with jailbreaking, then Android might be the device for you.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, Adam, you have a 4S, right?
Yeah.
So
love it.
iPhone 4S users, some users have been complaining of audio issues. No audio on some outgoing calls, getting some echoes, getting some static.
You know, I heard about the echo thing, and I think it was related to using the...
headset?
The headset, right?
Yeah.
And I don't use the headset. I've used my Bluetooth headset and not had any problems with it. In using the physical plugged-in headset, and I said this on my show, I have no evidence of this and nobody's pointed this out, but I'm wondering if there's some sort of weird thing where it's not picking up like the noise canceling or the, you know, the echoing thing, like if there's some software bug there.
Well, it does sound like a software bug because it only happens after a certain period of time and then suddenly it happens. And some say that if you turn on and then off the speakerphone feature, it goes away.
Right. Yeah. So my theory is like, is it trying to still do the noise canceling even though you have a headset plugged in and it's freaking it out sort of thing?
Yeah, that could be.
Yeah. But no, I haven't noticed that problem, but I don't typically use the plugged in headset for making calls. I use either Bluetooth or I'm talking on the phone or on the speakerphone. So
now that's for the echoes issue. There's also maybe unrelated static.
My call quality, and I don't know if it's restricted to just certain carriers where this issue is, but I mean, my call quality seems to have gone up, if anything.
That's what most people have said.
Yeah.
There's also some Verizon customers, well, I'm not going to say Verizon customers, some iPhone 4S users have noticed that on a rare occasion, like 1 in 10 calls, they get no audio. So again, sounds like software issues, and that makes sense.
Wait a minute. Here, this part, the reason I'm not noticing it probably is
how many calls
you'd
you
have
make
to use your phone as a phone.
Uh huh.
Who does that?
Right.
That's just crazy talk.
I did it tonight. It was kind of weird. I wasn't used to it, but
no,
yeah.
I mean, I make calls on my phone. It's my business phone, so I haven't had any issues, but I never did before. So it seems pretty much the same. I haven't had these. Luckily, knock on wood.
Yeah. The Apple Store application has a new feature, which is very cool. It's called Easy Pay. Well, there are actually a couple of new features, but this one is my favorite. Easy Pay allows you to go into an Apple Store and actually pay for those items you're walking out with.
As opposed to just taking them out like you were before?
Did I tell you that story?
Right.
I was at an Apple Store looking around at some stuff, hanging on to whatever, and I spaced out. I decided I didn't want to buy whatever it is I bought or
was going to buy
and like walked out of the store with it in my hand. And maybe I walked around a corner in the mall before I realized like the Apple Store was definitely out of sight. And I'm like, wait, why do I have this in my hand still? And I come back and the girl at the door, I'm like, hey, I totally just walked out of here and didn't even realize it with this thing in my hand. And she's like, yeah, I saw you walking out with it. I wasn't sure. I guess you must have paid for it. So that's why this works very well, is because you can just say, oh, no, I paid with it.
I mean, it's always been weird in there when you buy stuff and they self-check you out because they would, you know, put that little sticker on it. And
they
then
trust
at some
you.
Point, they even stopped, it seemed like, putting the sticker on stuff I would buy.
I've never gotten a sticker. Only, I mean, you can't get a Mac. The Macs are in the back. You can't get those. So
right.
It makes
but
sense if you're walking out with that. But so, yeah, if you have, you get the app, the Apple Store application, you scan the barcode. It's iPhone 4 and iPhone 4S only, I believe. And
right.
Because you need to be able to focus on the barcode. But you scan it, you pay for it with your Apple ID, and boom, you're good to go. You don't have to talk to anybody about it.
Yeah.
Personal pickup, you buy an application, you buy your, I guess, anything from the Apple Store
on the
app. Yep. Go into the Apple Store, say, hey, how does it work? You say you have a code or something?
Yeah. Well, you'll have a receipt, actually,
yeah, you have
in the
receipt.
Application.
Okay, so you show them that, and they say, okay, let me get that for you.
Well, I think they even pre-pick it. I mean, it goes,
yeah,
you
yeah.
tell it which store you want to pick up at, and it sends them a message, and then within 12 minutes, it was funny how exacting they were about the time frame. It's like, 12 minutes, it will be ready. And
yeah.
And it's like broken down for the back of the house people by, okay, you have this many minutes from the time you get the email, and this many minutes to pull it, and this many minutes, you know, buffer before the person's going to come in to pick it up.
Yeah, I guess Apple's telling people that from the time you place the order to the time you can pick it up, it's an hour.
Oh, they are. Oh, so they've changed I guess I had heard the rumors beforehand that they were saying something like 12 minutes.
Well, the 12 minute thing might be an internal thing where they have 12 minutes from the time they get the message to the time that they have to fulfill the order.
Gotcha. Yep.
But yeah, in the app it says you have an hour. And it's kind of cool because when you pick out what you want to buy, then it'll give you a list of all the stores that are nearby, and it'll tell you if that item's in stock, so you can choose which store you actually want to go to.
That's awesome. Cool.
And so does that mean you can also do like a customize? Can you customize a Mac and then have them? I guess it doesn't make any sense.
Yes,
why would you want to
you
pick
can.
It up?
Well, if you go online, you can do a custom build-to-order Mac and you can have it shipped to the store. And the big deal there, apparently, is that I think you get free shipping because they'll ship it to the store for free and then you can just pick it up there rather than having it shipped to your house and paying shipping.
No, you always get free shipping.
Do you on Apple?
I don't order computers directly from them. I think it's like,
yeah, there's like a price threshold. But for the most part, if you're going to buy an Apple product, you're going to end up with free shipping.
Yeah, if you're buying a Mac, it's totally free.
Well, then maybe accessories, especially if they're not in stock locally.
Sure, yeah.
I don't know. I had read that you would get free shipping to the store.
So, you know, that sounds good. That sounds like a good deal.
On everything.
So, yeah, I'm just now downloading the Apple Store application because I thought I was using it, and I'm like, where are all these features? Where are they? Oh, yeah, I have to update still. Now, is there when you go to the stores tab, does it show you where the stores are around you? Didn't it used to do that? I thought it had a little button where you could bring up a map. Maybe you just have to be in the area.
Yeah, no, it's under the stores.
Yeah, it shows only all stores for me or search by city or zip. It doesn't give me an option to see a map or anything.
Hmm.
Are you guys getting that? You guys must be closer to Apple stores than I am. The closest Apple store to me is like an hour and a half.
Yeah. For me, it just automatically pops up a list of nearby stores.
Okay. Yeah. That,
I have
they must
one,
have,
two, three, four, five.
Well, don't brag too much about that.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, if it helps any, the one that is farthest away from me, it says it's 24 and a half miles away.
Yeah. So in my case, I get the list of stores, and then the upper right, there's a little map icon, and if I tap that, I get the map with the pin drops.
Yeah. Yeah, they must have changed the threshold for how far or how close you have to be for that to work. All right, so...
So you don't get the store list at all?
Nope.
Are you sure?
Yeah, dude, I'm sure.
What are you getting? Nothing?
I get an all stores option in my table view, so I can tap.
Do you have
all
it disabled in location services?
No, I got the little arrow up in my status bar.
Okay, cool. Well, we don't have to do tech support anymore. Sorry, I just bored everybody.
It's all right.
Weird.
Yeah, but there's three people out there that went, oh, I should go look for the little arrow thing.
Yeah.
So
go.
Good job, Adam. You help people.
Now, okay. Last story we're going to talk about here because it's interesting. Regional U.S. carrier C Spire, which I've not heard of before, but it's
because you don't live in Mississippi.
Okay. The cool thing about C Spire is they're getting the iPhone 4S on the most magical of dates besides the original iPhone introduction date, which was the most magical date, of course. If we're talking about an iPhone podcast, then that's the most magical date. But so on 11/11/11, November 11th, 2011, iPhone 4S
Immortals comes out. What?
Yeah, you can still go see that. But if you need to get an iPhone 4S on C Spire, you can do that, which is really cool. I think it's great. It means that Apple is gonna work with any carrier that wants to have the iPhone 4S in the US. I haven't really looked at their data plans too much. It looks like, okay, so they have a streaming only data plan. All of it's unlimited. except for the asterisk on the two, on the first two, two plans. The first two plans
are going to be a problem for them.
Streaming only.
No streaming.
No streaming.
Oh, no streaming.
Which I don't even know how they check that or monitor they're talking that. Like, but it's like you have unlimited unless you're streaming, and then that doesn't count.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Even like, I mean, the most important is how do they communicate that difference to the customer? Because I don't know.
You get there's a certain amount of streaming that you get on the no streaming plan. Yeah, it's in
unlimited
it's in
streaming
the, it's in
access.
The fine print.
Okay. Official details on blah blah blah. The company typically offers 30 minutes of free streaming videos, music, and game broadcasts in each 30-day billing cycle. Although unlimited streaming is currently free through the billing through the end of the year, unlimited streaming access is available as an add-on for $30 per billing cycle or separate streaming passes. Blah blah blah. Okay, so plans one and two excludes.
It's more the same garbage where unlimited is not unlimited.
Yeah.
And we need to just stop calling unlimited unlimited because it's not. It's not on anybody's thing other than maybe the Sprint, you know, everything plan where you pay $100 a month or whatever it is for one device.
Yeah.
I mean, there are exceptions to the rule, but in general, anytime, my advice to most consumers is if they're telling you unlimited, make sure you check the fine print and discover that unlimited isn't really unlimited. It's unlimited for most. In a lot
or
of cases.
It appears unlimited for most.
Yeah.
So it looks like, and I guess we'll have to get more details when these plans are actually available, but they're talking videos, music, and game broadcasts. So specifically, I'm guessing Netflix, YouTube, etc., and iTunes Match would be the streaming.
So everything you want an unlimited plan for,
right? Exactly.
You don't get on the low end plans.
Well, I mean, for a month and a half, you get it for free. Oh well, it's cool.
It's cool that it's on more carriers for sure.
It's good.
Yeah, and then you know the related one is like you were saying, Apple's going to let whoever wants to have it, and then we have U.S. Cellular, who said, yeah, we thought we wanted it, but we don't.
Because of the terms.
Yeah.
Apple had some unreasonable requirements.
Well, the carrier subsidy is it's pretty well known, I think, that it's $100 more than most other handset manufacturers get from the carriers.
I hadn't heard that.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense. The iPhone is an expensive phone.
That's the theory.
It's an expensive phone. That is for sure.
But it's also really popular.
Yep.
Yep. So whatever premium carriers are paying for that subsidy, it has to be worth it to them.
Oh, otherwise, I mean, I know a lot of people, U.S. Cellular is pretty popular out here.
I think it depends on the size of the carrier. I mean, that's what U.S. Cellular is saying is, look, for us, it's not going to pan out. I mean, I'm sure they crunched the numbers.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So when I say it has to be a good deal for them, what I mean is it has to be a good deal for them or they wouldn't do it at all, like
exactly.
U.S. Cellular.
Yep.
All right. That's
all
we have
for Apple all the way around, I bet.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, they don't care. They takes what they can gets.
Yep. And they can gets a lot.
Oh yeah. They can't they've been had.
Well, I think and it wasn't in the story this week, but I think it's just amazing, so I want to point it out is, you know, it came out that Apple had lost some handset share in terms of unit numbers, I think. They're somewhere around, was it 10% in the U.S. and somewhere around 4%, I think, globally. But, and I think Ken Ray pointed this out on his podcast, but Apple accounts for more than 50% of the global handset revenues. So they
yes, they do.
Yeah.
4% of the unit share. But more than 50% of the profits.
They know how to make money. If you guys have been reading the Steve Jobs biography, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's apparent that Steve's had this ability to get a lot of markup on products early on. From the very beginning, he's been doing a very healthy markup on everything he sells.
Well, they just don't play that cutthroat game, and I mean that's just evidence of it, and it's not a game you want to play because it's a losing sum proposition, really. You know, it's just every time somebody wants to point out to me that Android is blowing Apple away in terms of market share or Samsung is selling more handsets than Apple, and that's great. And this is why I think that Apple really doesn't care, because Apple looks at it and goes, the percentage of the market doesn't matter to us. The percentage to our bottom line is where the reality is for us. We want to make great devices. This is what it costs us to make these great devices and put them out to the market and to continue to run our business and to make profits. Mm-hmm. And that's what they focus on. They don't focus on this, you know, competition game of I sold more things than you did.
Uh-huh.
And it's obviously working out for them. I'll just point to the stock price and to numbers like that market share and just say, you know, in the profit share, I guess I should say, of the market and go, okay, who's really winning?
Yeah. All right. Well, we had a lot of listener feedback. Unfortunately, as I said at the top of the show, I don't have my regular computer with me, so we don't have those to play. We'll play those next week. We got some calls in. We got one from Skip talking about GPS and how we totally screwed up how GPS works. And by we, I mean Jeff did.
I did?
Yep. We'll address it next week, though. It's okay.
Well, then how about if I apologize in advance?
Sure. I mean, I wouldn't say it's necessary. You can apologize next week.
All right.
Okay.
Then I rescind my apology.
But yeah, so next week we'll hear about some cool space stuff which relates to GPS and
it's like a rocket scientist that's giving me the smackdown?
Actually, yes. Well, he doesn't smack you down. We got some other emails with the smackdown. Skip's a very nice guy. So he's not smacking you down.
Okay. So if I'm being set straight by a rocket scientist, that's very cool.
It is. It is. All right. So on to our iDevice picks. Jeff, what do you have this week?
Okay. My pick this week is probably something that many sci-fi fans will consider a necessary reference tool. And that would be the new Doctor Who encyclopedia for the iPad. And this is actually an official BBC application. So they have all of the correct, completely legit information about the episodes because they made them. And it has a nice interface, and it has all kinds of awesome cross-referencing between all the episodes and characters, and it's just this really cool, fun application. Here's where some people will be disappointed, though. It's $6.99, and it includes the 11th Doctor. And you can buy as add-on modules the 9th and 10th Doctor, but none of the previous Doctors. Each of those add-on packs is $6.99. So if you want to have the entire reboot of Doctor Who from the 9th Doctor forward, that's $21. So it's kind of pricey for that, but it's still a pretty cool application.
I still don't know what Doctor Who is about.
You're dead to me.
It looks like there's some space and some bow ties involved.
There you go.
So I can get behind that.
And cute girls.
Yeah, I see a cute girl.
Flying through space and time in a blue wooden phone box. What more do you need to know?
Is Bill and Ted involved?
Bill and Ted, part of what they do is kind of a ripoff of this, but in a totally drunk way. So there's that.
So they're tangentially involved.
Sure.
Okay. All right, I'm on board.
All right, and sonic screwdrivers and Amy Pond in really short skirts.
Mmm.
Mmm.
So the Doctor Who Encyclopedia $6.99 is available for the iPad, and that is Jeff's pick. It'll be in the show notes. Adam, what is your pick this week?
Well, since we talked about it earlier, I'm going to pick hipster.
Oh.
In a different context. This is actually hipster the app, not hipster the mustache thing that we were talking about earlier. And, you know, it's kind of like a Instagram clone to a certain degree. But the thing that it brings to the table is it puts your photos, rather than just applying an effect, it puts it into sort of a postcard format.
I like it.
So it has a bunch of different themes and effects. You pick your photo or you shoot a photo and it turns it into a really cool looking postcard, including adding the location. And then you can share those out through the Hipster service. So it becomes a stream and you can friend people just like you would on, you know, service like Instagram, something like that. You can also share to Facebook and Twitter and all that sort of fun stuff. And people can like your Hipster postcards. But also, you know, you can flip the card around and you get the text from it and you get little postage stamps that, you know, are people's icons and the people that, as people favorite your little Hipster postcards, they add additional stamps and stuff like that. So it's got a cool little quirky interface and it's just kind of a fun little app for sharing photos and making them look kind of like postcards. So that was kind of cool.
Cool.
Yeah. So rather than just have a boring, you know, this is my location, this is my photo, you can kind of combine all those things.
And it's free.
And it's free.
It's totally free.
Oh, that's way cheaper than mine.
Mm-hmm. By several dollars.
Several.
All right. My pick this week is an app we might have talked about. However, they added an iPad version now. So it's universal. It's the Mint.com application. It's free. If you have Mint.com, the iPad version just does not even touch how awesome... Well, the iPhone version does not even touch how awesome the iPad version is. So on the iPhone, of course, you get a summary of all your accounts, and you can look through transactions and see how much money you have and all that good stuff. But the fun thing about Mint is when you go to the website and you see the big graph, the big pie chart of what you spent your money on. So it's broken down by entertainment, food, automobile, etc., whatever major categories. Then you can click on those categories. So you click on food and it shows you restaurants, shopping, etc. Click on restaurants and then it gives you another pie chart with all the different restaurants you've gone to, and you can see what you've spent at every point as you drill down. And it really helps you figure out how you're spending your money. It can be a depressive process, but... The iPad version makes it, it adds a little element of fun. And of course, it's very useful too, because you can break it down. So if you haven't already, load it up on your iPad because it's super cool. It's crazy cool. And it's free. If you have Mint.com, if you don't have Mint.com yet, I don't know what you're doing. You got to get the Mint.com.
Well, people that don't have money, why would they need it?
Well, I guess if you don't have any money, then I'm kind of interested in how you're listening to this podcast, because maybe we've got some homeless people listening to the podcast.
They could totally go to their local Apple store.
Well, they go to the local Apple store where they're already streaming this podcast.
See?
They stream it to the street. So you've got the the local, you get the Apple store radio, you've got your Maccast, you got your Mac Geek Gab, you got your Twit, and then you got your We Have Communicators.
It's like a well-balanced meal.
I think they play the We Have Communicators is more of like a 2 a.m. kind of show. It's like an Adult Swim.
Story of my life.
All right. So yeah, but check it out. Mint.com, the Mint app on your iPad is great. So with that, of course, you can find all the iPhone picks and the show notes, wehavecommunicators.com. It's links. If you're driving, don't worry about looking it up, writing it down, whatever. You can check out all the stuff that we talked about right there. Wehavecommunicators.com. Of course, you can comment on the show right there. We see that. I address the comments. I might poke Jeff sometimes if there's a comment left for Jeff, and he'll check it out. You can review us in iTunes.
Yeah, no one ever leaves comments for me.
Oh, yeah. Well, man, they're very happy with you. They're very satisfied.
So that totally makes sense.
Yeah. So us, but, not so much.
Well, okay. Now I'm questioning why don't I have more comments?
You're not doing a good enough job at derailing the show.
I'm not failing bad enough.
Well, people enjoy it when you, I would put it in air quotes, when you fail. Because it's really not a fail. It's a win, because it's fun.
Okay. Well, it's a service I provide. You're welcome.
Thank you. Of course, you can send us email. feedback@wehavecommunicators.com is the email address. You can also call us. The phone number is 202-642-6667. The audio quality is much better if you send it in, you record it with the voice memo app on your iPhone or your iPod Touch and then email that in. That's
surprisingly good.
It's real good. Much better
I
than calling
people
us,
to use that. Yeah.
Definitely. And that way it's easier for me too, because I don't have to log into my Google Voice account and download it that way. I can just download the audio file.
What is the rationale that they can't just attach the audio file when they send that?
Is there not? There isn't even a download button, right? You have to go in the activity and you.
Yeah, you got to go into the app and then there's a download button from there. So it's really annoying.
I mean, what I did in the past is I play the message in the web page.
There's a download button. You can download the MP3, but you have to do it from the web interface.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a big hassle.
And I saw it, because I have to still go into the web interface, and that's a mess.
Yeah, Skype is worse because Skype has no way to download the audio at all.
Okay.
Got to record it with Audio Hijack or something. So.
Yeah, email.
Don't even get me started.
I digress. This is This Week in Audio.
Yeah, feedback at wehavecommunicators.com. Send it there. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Of course, you can find Jeff Gamet at the Mac Observer. He's there every day writing, doing awesome stuff, macobserver.com. He's also on Twitter, at jgamet is his Twitter handle, and he is on Zazzle. Got the Zazzle store going, zazzle.com/jgamet. That's where you can find his wonderful drawings on an assortment of different items. Mugs, shirts, hats, panties, right?
That's right.
You can get a chicken on some panties, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. A very nice...
Really, who wouldn't want that?
Yeah, who wouldn't? Maybe someone who doesn't wear panties.
Well, then they can get a t-shirt.
Yeah, get a t-shirt.
Or a mug.
Yeah, you should get a mug. We Have Communicators mug, actually, is where you can get the official We Have Communicators mug from that Zazzle store. You can get in a mug, a big mug, beer stein, frosted mug, other things. I think there are a couple other options there. Different colors, certainly. It's very cool. Check it out. Zazzle.com/jgamet. Adam Christensen's at the Mattcast, mattcast.com. The wonderful podcast from Adam Christensen.
Yep.
Of course... Member.mattcast.com is the premium membership.
The premium show. Yeah, I just did a really cool episode on the console and reading your log files and how to like parse through that and find information to help you with your troubleshooting. And I learned some cool, there's some cool new stuff in the console, or stuff that's always been there that I didn't know about when I started diving in, including this cool feature where you can add a marker. Did you know you could do that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, you got
so you're reading along and you're getting a lot of stuff. You want to mark what you've read.
You can mark a location so that new data coming in comes in after that marker, so you can find a point. So if you're trying to troubleshoot through an issue, you can launch the app again and then find your place. You can use that marker as a filter to kind of figure out where you're at.
Oh, cool. So it's persistent across the different launches.
Yes.
Nice. At MattCast is his Twitter handle. And you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Michael Johnston. I also do at Lil Reviews, L-I-L Reviews. I got a couple beers that I want to talk about on Lil Reviews. I got to post those up there.
Ooh, I'm going to follow that.
Yeah, check it out. I do other stuff like food, iPhone stuff, whatever. Check it out.
Are you on Untappd yet?
No, I don't think that would work for me in my area. That's a regional thing, right?
No, not Tap Hunter, Untappd. It's a beer drinking social network. You got to get it.
Ooh, wait a second.
Untappd.
Untappd. All right.
Beer drinking social network. Where do I? What is it?
UNTAPPD. Untappd.com, I believe it is.
Oh.
Yeah.
Drop the E.
Follow me.
I'm gonna do that. Oh wait.
Okay.
Here's one thing.
And they have an iOS app, so we'll throw that in as a bonus pick.
There you go. It's a value add. We add value to your listening experience here. That's what we provide.
Then you can rate beers, give beer notes.
Can you keep track of the beers you like? You get a little spot where you can say, I like this beer, like this beer.
Yeah.
Oh, good. I have a note in Simple Note that's been keeping track of that so far.
Well, then this will be better.
Certainly. All right.
I suddenly forgot how to speak. D.
Yeah. Untappd. Drop the E. No E.
Yeah, no vowels in social media.
Yep. This is 2011. No vowels.
Or social apps.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I guess with that, we'll see you next time on We Have Communicators. Pacha.
An internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
A stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right?